everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate, episode 52, the final episode of the season. And actually, it's going to be the final episode for quite a while, because episode 53 won't be released until, well, recorded even, until around about July 1st. So we're actually taking quite a bit of time off.
But what about the exciting Nations League you have to look forward to?
Nah. Kevin De Bruyne is welcome on this show anytime. We just need to basically wrap up the footballing season. It feels like it's gone on for a long time, AJ, considering we went straight from the Euros straight into the Premier League season. So
52 episodes?
Well, yeah, it would have been 52 episodes all the way, no breaks. So if anything, I feel like FIFA have done this for us, not putting the World Cup in the summer. Yeah. giving us a bit of time off. But we're going to have a busy Christmas, that's for sure. And what better way to celebrate the final episode by finally, after a very, very, very long time, having all four of us on.
You know what the irony is here? We've got all four of us on the show, and the ironic presence of Cookie, where he's not really used to being part of four of anything, is he?
Ouch.
He was working on that.
He was.
He wrote that down.
He wrote that down at the top. This little shit.
Right, we've got today, bearing in mind it's the final show of the season, four finals to discuss. Not too bad. Oh. And then we've got
this number four keeps popping up, doesn't it?
It does keep popping up, it does. And the amount of us that had Arsenal at number four in our Who's Up or Down is even more interesting. So sorry, Cookie. Obviously, just to remind you, you don't get points for having Arsenal finish fourth, because they didn't. Anyway.
Hey, I was truthful in mine, by the way. I didn't fudge it in any way, shape or form. I stuck.
Neither did I. I just did it for lols.
To be fair, he could go on the defence here and then go on the attack and say, well, Liverpool would have won the quadruple, like, you know, the quadruple, you know, and that was on, and it ended up being sort of like a very mediocre double.
I mean, Cookie,
yeah, but have a bus parade for it.
Oh, man, I genuinely, like, the thing is, I love to see crowds, I love to see celebrations, but even me looking at that, I just think, could you imagine losing a final quite, not embarrassingly as such, but sort of like when they were there for the taking, when, you know, you're on top pretty much the whole game, your front three just isn't quite doing enough with, like, you know, Mane basically announcing before the game that he was off. And Salah obviously been shit, really, to be honest, since the contract talk. And you think, right, literally what, within the hours, 12 hours after, like, the full-time whistle, they're celebrating to rubbing off the Champions League for the seventh time on the side of a bus. And then, you know, trying to be all, like, happy.
It was really weird, because I saw Trent on there and I was like, I'm surprised he felt comfortable enough to be all jokey and
drinking,
on a rooftop bus, when that was one of the worst bits of defending I've ever fucking seen from a fullback.
I was about to say, I can't believe his tweet was champion of my city. I mean, you've won the FA Cup and the League Cup. You had four trophies, you got two. You gave it the big ones pre-game of the Champions League, and you came away with fuck all.
They must have.
I think he's more alluding to maybe the fact that he has won everything in his city now, so maybe he's a champion in that right. But he did say one of four, more to come. And I've got to be honest, with all the build-up that Liverpool were putting out there with Salah's tweets and, you know, we've got a score to settle, and they really didn't fucking settle anything. They didn't. I mean, we might as well start with the Champions League final. Look, it was the biggest talking point of the weekend, and we've got a couple of things regarding it as well. But I must say, I was really surprised. You know, I spoke to people and they were like, Liverpool have got this. It's going to be a walkover. And I was kind of like, I tell you what, Real Madrid, I think they're going to be a bit underestimated in this final by a lot of people. But to come out the way they did, I was really surprised. Something just didn't seem right. It just felt off. Like Salah's been missing since AFCON. you know, to go to into that many finals, and the AFCON started it all. And then he hasn't scored a goal in any of the big games. I mean, he hasn't. When I saw a stat about his big game performances, I was quite surprised by that as well. But he's gone missing. You had Mane, who's just, yeah, bad, really bad timing. The whole conference with Klopp saying, when your goalkeeper wins man of the match, that says it all in the Champions League final. May I remind you, Jurgen Klopp, that Alisson got your man of the match in the Champions League final in 2019. But hey-ho, Klopp seems to have a short memory for a lot of things. What did you make it of it all? Because obviously, Kossi, Norwich are gone now, so you're a Liverpool fan.
Of course.
What did you make of Liverpool's Champions League performance? And then Cookie and Jace, you can jump in and I guess let it rip, really.
I was disappointed. Obviously, the follow-on from the end of the season was, yeah, it's pretty guttering, but what an end of the season. Obviously, I missed out on the episode because I was away. However, that was just absolutely epic for if you're a neutral watching that. Whereas, you know, they weren't expected to win the league. However, it's a pretty poor performance against Wolves in that game. And that sort of almost followed on to the Champions League final as well. And just the front three who have been like completely integral to Liverpool's success over the last few years, regardless of it being like, you know, chopping and changing with Firmino, obviously Jota and Luis Diaz coming in. There was, for me, I watched that just thinking something's not quite right. And there was obviously within that week, it was like, oh, Mane's off. He's felt like he's done everything at Liverpool. And for me, it sort of went into that game thinking, well, he has done everything at Liverpool. But that doesn't mean that you don't want to do more, even if you've decided that you're going to fuck off at the end of the season. It just, for me, just something wasn't quite right. I felt sorry for Luis Diaz because obviously, you know, from what he's come from and what he's come to and what he's going to be doing next season is going to be, you know, for me, absolutely world class. But something didn't quite right. Do you know what I mean? Something just wasn't quite right in that team. And I didn't know if it was injuries or like, you know, Fabinho, obviously, and Thiago were sort of rumoured not to be fit for that game or like, you know, last minute fitness tests. Just something wasn't right.
Me and Jason had this conversation. And obviously, now that you're both here, I just wanted to bring this to light. But I feel like things haven't been quite right for a little while. When you look back at the results, right?
Agreed.
And you could go back to maybe beginning of April. I don't know. Maybe that's about a good time. So you've got the Man City Liverpool game finished 2-2. You had the Liverpool Benfica game finished 3-3. You had the Man City Liverpool FA Cup final, which was obviously very close. Liverpool walked over Man United. Can't really take much from that game. But then obviously you had the 2-0 win against Everton. I remember we were all sat here going, just something was like really off about Everton's performance. They were fighting and Liverpool just didn't seem to know what to do. They couldn't get the goals. They then had Villarreal, barely scraped a 1-0 win past Newcastle away, barely knocked Villarreal out after being 2-0 down. They then drew a game, which now when you look back at it, the game against Spurs, you realise how detrimental that game was to Liverpool's title hopes now, not getting a win there. They then beat Villa 2-1. Beat Chelsea on penalties after not scoring in a final again. Beat Southampton 2-1. You said the Wolves game didn't look right. And then they lost to Real Madrid. So they've nearly gone 2 months with games that they haven't looked like the traditional Liverpool. And you just wonder how much of a transition this... Not transition, I think it's a bit drastic, but how much of a change actually might be going on. Because you're starting to hear that, you know, Mane's going to go. The Salah talks are up in the air. And now you're hearing of Liverpool maybe dipping their toe in the market for big players again, which hasn't happened for a little while. So I just wonder how much is actually going on behind the scenes. So, I mean, from the outside in, Jace Cook, obviously the Champions League final you can allude to. You can talk about that as well, Real Madrid. But, I mean, what are your thoughts with Liverpool going into next season?
I said at the end of the game, and it might be a bit drastic, but my immediate reaction after that Champions League final, and I'll come on to the final itself in a bit, but my immediate reaction was end of an era. There was speculation about Klopp, obviously, greatly, and there was a lot of anticipation. Will Gerrard make the jump in 2024, I think it is, whenever his contract's up? Klopp obviously came out and signed that new contract. Salah's situation has been a public affair since I can remember, probably the last 6 months in terms of his contract. Mane out of nowhere goes public the week, the penultimate week of the Champions League final. Trent Alexander-Arnold, now I know you kind of had my ear a little bit in the last pod about I don't think he's had a great season. I feel like he's defensively average. That showed again in the Champions League final. And I just feel like, and again, it could be very drastic, but I just feel like now that Klopp has confirmed his long-term commitment, that this is a team that has individuals that need to move on. And as you said, if they're planning on spending big, they need to then set sights on who those replacements are going to be. Because I feel like Mane's head, what was going through Mane and his agent's head to have this conversation with Bayern Munich and then bring it public in the, now it may not be Mane and his camp making it, you know, but Mane clearly had an interview and it got leaked that way. Salah, look, if he really wanted to stay, a lot of players use this term, it's not in my hands. Well, the reality is it is in their hands and they can speak to their agents and they can manage the expectation. Personally, I think if Salah really wanted to stay, you wouldn't have 9 months of prolonged negotiations. There's clearly something political going on there. I don't know Liverpool's wage structure, but I did read something that I think Firmino is on more than Mane and more than a couple of other players in the same kind of area. I think Firmino's on about 180 grand a week. So whether or not Mane's looked at that and thought, you know what, not for me. I don't know. Or maybe he's just thinking he's accomplished all he can with Liverpool and he wants to move on. Bottom line is you've got Mane and Salah. That is two players and pretty key players where their futures have been up in the air for the last 6 to 8 months. You can't be doing that. You can't be having a season. We all know what it was like when Man City had the whole Aguero situation reigning over their heads a little bit, where you never really knew, was he out of favour? Was he signing? Was he staying? That all kind of came about. Mane and Salah have been and are at present two key cogs of that three-man attack. And if their headspace isn't in it, and I said it after the game, but if you're going into next season with Mane gone, and let's say Diaz is the replacement there, but if you've still got Salah on your books, when he's quite clearly said he's not, I know he said he's going to stay for another year, but you ain't telling me you're going to get the same Salah in that year because he's going to be thinking about the next season already and not getting a big injury. Not so. Liverpool have got a big summer coming up for various reasons, and clearly something isn't right. And clearly, I think it's to do with Salah and Mane, or both. You know, both and or just feels like they're at the cusp of, they've peaked, they've won what they've won, and I think now's the time where they need to hit the refresh button. Much like City do every couple of years, I feel like City are going to be like that again this year. They've alluded to that publicly again in the, you know, the last couple of days as well. But something needs to change, because I think Liverpool, and again, it's dramatic because they've only lost, I think, 4 games all season, but in the big games where it matters, they are getting found out and performances are waning, and that stops with the manager, but the manager situation clearly isn't going to change in the near term, so therefore new players need to come into it.
So usually when a team is playing bad or like underperforming yet still winning, that's the sign of champions. Now, how many times did Man United do that in the Fergie days? However, they were still... You still need to have that big performance in those big games. And that Champions League for me was quite telling when they couldn't get away with performing badly, not scoring, not taking the chances, or like, you know, something just not quite clicking. And obviously they came out the losers. And you think, well, actually in the balance of play, you could probably say Liverpool were probably the better team. However, no one's going to remember, oh, they were probably the better team. They're probably going to remember exactly...
It was the last couple of months, the weight of this quadruple talk has got to them and they've made them feel invincible.
Yeah.
Because in their last 2 months, then every single game, I've always felt that they've got another gear or two that they can go up to. And they, most of the time, they got the job done. But they just got found out in the second half of Real Madrid. I don't know what Ancelotti said to that team in that dressing room in that halftime talk, but it certainly worked because they stepped it up a gear.
For 38 minutes in the first half, Liverpool showed why offensively they're the most feared in Europe. But overall, Courtois showed why he plays for Real Madrid and he is one of the best goalkeepers in the world when he's on it. But equally, for every man of the match performance a goalkeeper puts in a big game like a Champions League final, it doesn't matter how good the goalkeeper is, if you're Mo Salah and you have four or five golden opportunities, you take at least one of those.
£400,000 a week players take two of those chances.
Salah had a good game, but the reality is, in that big game, those chances, he converted zero. And that is not good enough. It is not good enough. And Real Madrid, they were awful in the first half. They couldn't get hold of it in midfield. They weren't pressing high. They dropped deep. The midfield, the distance between midfield and defence was massive. And then you had that midfield gap in, you know, they were terrible. But Ancelotti grabbed them and said, go at Liverpool. You're good at football. And
it'll be funny, they were lucky not to be behind going into that break. And if they think they were, personally, if they were behind going into that break, they would have lost that 2 or 3 nil. And none of us would be talking about Liverpool bottling it or any sort of, like, you know, poor performances over the last 2 months. But because it was typical of the performances of the last 2 months, this is why it's such a big talking point.
As I say, you could have argued that Real Madrid should have probably been in front anyway.
That was the warning as well. And the thing is, like,
was the
Liverpool were sort of, you know, worried about obviously repeating the last Champions League final against Madrid. And they should have been out for blood, really. But that was a huge warning. And that should have been enough for Liverpool to go in at half time and think, do you know what?
I think that changed it at half time.
Exactly.
That chance.
Well, should we talk about that chance just before half time? Because if I remember correctly, that was the disallowed goal for offside.
Oh, come off Fabinho, yeah.
That I'm still sitting here today wondering how the hell that got disallowed, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the rule states if it's an unintentional deflection and all that kind of stuff, then, you know, it can't be.
But here's the thing, right? For me,
unintentional.
Rule,
when did that come in? If it still comes off a Liverpool player, it comes off a Liverpool player.
Yeah, but here's the thing for me, right? So the rule is, as Scott alluded to there, as I believe, the reason why it wasn't given is because it was an unintentional progression of the ball towards the Real Madrid player, right? But can someone who wrote the rule book tell me this? If you're a defender, at what point do you intentionally play the ball to the other team? They're saying it was unintentional. But in what defensive situation does Fabinho or Konate intentionally pass it to a Real Madrid offensive player? I'll give you the answer to that. Never.
Look, let's be honest. We're not. It's not old news. It's the same news we get all the time, and we'll leave it there. Anyway, we've got two quick finals to tick off, and then we'll discuss one more because it plays a big part of us next season. Me and Jason didn't actually cover the Europa League final last week between Frankfurt and Rangers. Probably, in my opinion, the best final of the lot, actually. And we've got the Conference League final where, yet again, that man secures a European trophy and, another trophy in general, really. He just knows how to win big games, regardless of whether you agree with his methods or not, because there's an argument that Feyenoord actually probably gave him a good run for their money. But at the end of the day, they're not the ones sitting there with that, may I add, beautiful trophy. The more I look at it, the more I actually think it's a bit of a stunner, to be honest. Much better than the Europa League trophy. What did you make of that one? You've got Frankfurt going into the Champions League and Roma, they would have done anyway, but they go into the Europa League after winning the Conference League final, which, before I go on mute, I feel has actually had a really good introduction to the calendar fixture. I know we mocked it, but I must say, I do think Roma winning that final gives it a real lift.
Didn't you have an argument on the TFD Twitter account to some arrogant Spurs fan, mm-hmm, who basically turned around and says, like, we're too big and good for this competition, and was just like, oh yeah, all players really want to grow up and win this competition. And he was like, wasn't he mocking you?
There was, I'll tell you what, and Scott made this point, I think, last week, the week before. The Europa League used to get mocked. Everyone, when they renamed the UEFA Cup the Europa League, and everyone thought, oh God, here we go again, change your rules, this, that, and the other. Tell you what, the last couple of seasons, the Europa League has been as exciting as I can remember for a very, very long time. And especially this season, having Rangers and Frankfurt in the final.
I was going to say, the final matched up to the tournament as well, didn't it?
From a football purist perspective, was just insane, right, for a start. Second of all, it's given those, not going to say medical, because some of those teams can quite plausibly punch their weight in the Champions League, but it gives the other big European teams in Europe a chance to put themselves on the map, whereby the Champions League, you know, and I, the last time I can remember the Europa League and this Conference League and European football being this exciting is when you used to get the likes of Valencia and Barcelona in the old UEFA Cup. So rather than the Champions League, a lot of those teams used to be in the UEFA Cup. In those days, you didn't have people mocking Barcelona for winning the UEFA Cup. You didn't have, you know, people mocking Valencia for winning the UEFA Cup or whatever, because it was seen as a, you know, it was a trophy, it was respected. But I'll tell you what, when you compare the Champions League to the Europa League, for example, and then look, I mean, this Conference League, now I was sceptical of the beginning of the season, oh, Conference League, but actually when all this talk of Super League bollocks and, you know, having all these big teams in one league and this, that and the other, Roma winning, I mean, I'm a Serie A fan and Roma are my go-to team. Roma winning that Conference League was significant, not because they had ups and downs this year in Serie A with Mourinho and they ended up finished, I think, fifth in the end. Couldn't quite get into the top four. But that was their first trophy they'd won for 14 years. And if anyone knows Italian football and knows the city of Rome, like Totti, they are the most passionate fans you will ever see. And you've only got to look at the scenes in Rome with the whole tour bus after. Like, it brings clubs like Rome, it makes clubs like Rome, and I'm not, they're not irrelevant, but it makes them more prevalent and relevant. Just like a bit of football nostalgia. But it is, and for teams that are on the kind of cusp of, in the Premier League, if you take into context of that, because I think you have to finish seventh to get a place in the Conference League, it makes teams like Wolves, Arsenal, Palace, you know, it gives them incentive that finishing seventh, actually, if we can break the top 10 and get into seventh. Look, if I saw Palace in the Conference League, I wouldn't care if it's the Europa League or Champions League, but just seeing Palace in Europe would be absolutely immense.
I think the reward, there's a couple of things. Like, the Conference League, I've got to be honest, I mean, we looked at that and it was Tottenham and Spurs in there. And I think the fact that, you know, clubs can drop down from the Europa League into the Conference League, yes, it makes it a bit more big names. And but you're absolutely right. What that has done for Roma has given them something that I don't think they would have ever achieved. They didn't do it with Totti. And I think Totti would have given his leg to have been there and been a part of that European success the other week, because what that meant, and having Jose Mourinho as the first manager to do it as well, I'm telling you now, in 5 years' time, we will all be looking back at this Conference League and it will be massive. Not as big as obviously the other two, but it will have, like how the Europa League has transformed, it will become quite a mate, if it's not already, off the back of that Roma win. And to be honest, I don't know about you, but the Champions League's fantastic at times, right? But let's be fair, it's made for the same teams to always get to the knockout stages. You know, there is not a chance UEFA will ever have certain teams not making that. Well, the Europa League had Barcelona obviously drop into it because of their drop off, which added a bit to it. But I think the matchups that Europa League have offered and the Conference League have offered are just games we would have never seen before. I mean, could you have imagined if we'd have got, I'm glad we, well, actually, I would say I'm glad we didn't, but that was, I probably would have been, I would have really liked to have seen it if I knew I could guarantee one result. But could you imagine if we'd have seen a West Ham Rangers final in the Conference League? That would have shaped a rivalry for decades. I don't care what you say.
We all wanted it.
We all wanted it. I just didn't want West Ham to even have a chance to win it. But Rangers, I tell you now, Celtic can have all their Champions League memories at the group stage if they want, because what Rangers did on that final, for me, regardless of what tournament it was, far exceeds anything Celtic have done, whether it's a one-off win against Barcelona or whatnot. Those Rangers fans need to be proud of that whole day out, because it was
It's a kick of a ball from 12
yards. It was immense. It's the best final of all of them, of all four. I actually sat there
and it had to be Ramsey that gave it up as well.
Yeah, but it's brought Frankfurt to a new light, because I've never seen a fan base like it. They took over the whole of Europe, and now, when you talk about reward and look at Roma, they're going to go into pot one of the Europa League, and Frankfurt are now going to be pot one of the Champions League. We've spoken about like the Carabao Cup and FA Cup losing its magic. All they've got to do is say, fuck giving it to seventh, give fifth and sixth to Europa League, give seventh to Conference League, and then give the winner of the FA Cup or the winner of the Carabao Cup straight into the Conference League and give it a reward. Just to give these teams, like your Palaces, like your Nottingham Forests and whatnot, I mean, one win in the FA Cup and they could be in Europe. That's what it should be all about. Not about a couple of million here or there, where actually you get more money for finishing 17th than you do winning a trophy. That's just not going to do anything. These clubs have been so far, they've been bought out of these tournaments. And I'd love to see, you know, Dutch teams, Scottish teams, all of these start celebrating European titles and whatnot again. Because at the end of the day, you know, Roma can now turn around and go, well, we've won a European trophy before, you know, before Arsenal or Spurs in the last 30 years. And I wouldn't turn around and go, yeah, but you haven't been in a Champions League final, because at the end of the day, I don't sit there and boast about that. That's not what it's about. I'd much
Sevilla
rather
fans
have
one. Really boast and are so proud of their Europa League wins.
Well, so they should be.
Five of the last eight. And so they should be. They get there every year. They're always competitive in that competition and they take it seriously, whereas others haven't.
If I was Arsenal right now, I'd be fucking ignoring top four, and that would be my number one objective, is to win that Europa League all day long.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what as well, and I can't believe we haven't mentioned this, but has anyone thought about and considered, and again, it's only a one-off and it's a one player, but has anyone also considered the potential impact in terms of development? Tammy Abraham got a lot of, not criticism, but there was a lot of sceptics about him going to Rome and whether he'd be suited to it. He's been amazing for Roma, number one. But number two, he's actually been part of a starting 11, playing every week in a very competitive league, and it has been this year especially more so. And he's come out of it winning a trophy. So from an England perspective, brilliant.
He's got to be our second striker.
I agree.
I don't think anyone else can get anywhere near what Tammy Abraham's done this year. And I mean, you talk about making your... I mean, I think we're forgetting how big this is for... I think if you're not in and around the Roma club and whatnot, I know people probably go, yeah, whatever. I'm not going to lie, but Tammy Abraham has just put his name in God tier standard when it comes to Roma Football Club. moving forward. You know how Napoli adore Maradona.
They love him. They love him. He's got 17 league goals this year for Roma and 4 assists. He got 9 in the Conference League. He got 27 goals this season overall in all competitions. And you're not talking about a prolific Roma team, because prolific they are not. But you're talking about one man leading the line that had to adapt because he decided to go out and prove himself. And he's taken the challenge that's thrown at him. And you're right, in Rome, he's got godlike. I mean, they're already trying to draft up a... I think the reality is he'll look to push on now for a Premier League move again. But they're already drafting up a new contract, trying to convince him to stay because they absolutely adore him. Chris Smalling is another one. Now, Gareth Southgate will never pick him for England again because he doesn't deem him...
He got man of the match in that final, didn't he?
Yeah, but it's not just...
I only saw highlights of that game and what I saw of him, Jesus Christ.
But he is...
Absolute shad, completely different player to what he was at Man United.
But in Rome and Roma the last couple of seasons, he is consistently, week in, week out, one of their best players. And you can say all you want, oh, it's Serie A. But for me, if you want to learn the art of defending, again, this is very kind of 90s nostalgia, but if you want to learn the art of defending, you go to Italy and learn your trade in defending. Because if you want to learn any form of defence, Italian football is where it's at. It's given those clubs that play the right way, that don't have the massive funds to go out splashing 500k a week and £80 million, £200 million on signings, it's given them a voice in European football. And to be quite honest, if the big teams, the Real Madrids and Barcelonas and Juventus want to push on for the Super League, fucking do it. Because I'd much rather watch the Europa League and the Conference League than them pansy around every week and watch the same old dross, because that's all it is.
I just think it's going to give, and especially when you talk about big players and whatnot, players coming through, this is our chance to finally see some of these players on big stages. And I'm all for it. I know we've got a lot of teams in there that we don't know, but then again, who are we to say, you know, we should be scoffing at some of these teams that are in these European countries? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at West Ham with their scouting with Tufao and Suchet. Like, that's what it's given everyone the chance to do. So,
also,
I'm all for
it. A lot of English or British teams meet these unknowns across Europe. And despite all the money that's in the Premier League and the amount of money that these even mid Premier League teams spend, a lot of the time they lose against these teams that I don't know, that the media sniff out and just think, oh, who are they? Never heard of them.
Well, we did.
That's why, that's the
we
thing.
Had that massive game against part-time plumbers when Nuno was there and we lost and it knocked us out of the Conference League. And that's
exactly
that for that team is their biggest moment in their club's history. So who are we to turn around and scoff at these clubs and go, nah, you shouldn't have that because, you know, who wants Tottenham to go out of it? Well, at the end of the day, that's the way it is. And West Ham next season are in the Conference League. Any other season, it would have been the typical top six, but West Ham are in the Conference League again. And you're sitting there going, I tell you what, I could see them potentially winning that. And then all of a sudden they're in the Europa League next season and it goes down to the next team. So I'm all for that tournament. I think it's done wonders and it's probably one of the tournaments of the season this year because of what it's done for certain teams and moments it's created, and also for being a beautiful trophy, as I've already alluded to. Final tournament to talk about is the one that impacts us all next season, and the one I think we all unanimously are happy with the outcome. And I'm going to come to you, Kossi, for this one, because you, I know, have attachments to this team. But also, I know you are a massive fan of their manager and what he has done for that club. And my God, is he a legend over there now.
Incredible. What more can you say? That man is an absolute footballing genius. He took... The thing is, what annoys me, people always talk about Houghton and, oh, like, yeah, he's such a lovely guy. He plays drab, shite football. Like, he might have been good for Forest for 5 minutes. Like, you know, kind of got him out of the shit initially. But this just highlights how terrible of a manager that he is. And I just don't understand what happened with Steve Cooper and Swansea, because when he was at Swansea, I don't recall him really going off the boil at all, or just like, you know, I don't really remember any of their performances just sort of like, you know, plummeting. I never really understood why he left in the first place. And for him to go to Nottingham Forest, one of the biggest clubs historically in England, and do what he did was just absolutely unbelievable. And though obviously Forest massively rode their luck in the final, and obviously in the semi-finals as well, it was Samba's genius, which I think we all absolutely love to see, during the penalty shootout. And to be honest, they nearly bottled it against Sheffield United, bearing in mind the money that Sheffield United have spent in the last few years. They were so close to bottling it when they were completely in charge. And that first leg of the Sheffield United versus Forest game, Forest should have been, they should have been miles. Their name should have been in that final from that first leg. But for them to show the courage and turn up on the day, obviously, we'll talk about the game with a couple of penalty shouts potentially, but me, like my family who were there, honestly, like, I know I'm always going to get shit for following Norwich and obviously like following Liverpool at the same time as well. Norwich always come first. Out of 13, honestly, like, I watched that game as if I was a Forest fan. And like, though I'm not, I was absolutely buzzing for my family. I was absolutely buzzing watching the game. And if a neutral was like watching me watch that game, you'd have thought I'd supported Forest that like my whole life as well. And they deserve it. They were very unlucky not to come second as well, because they had a very unlucky result against Luton in the last few games of the season, where they should not have lost that. And if you watch the balance of play, you watch the highlights, you watch that actual game, that Luton didn't deserve that. And as much as I was a bit gutted that Luton didn't get to the final, overall, Forest deserved that. And it was one bad performance against Bournemouth, which got them second over Forest as well. But to go up in the playoffs, honestly, like, I think Jason and I can talk from experience, there's nothing like it. And they deserve their day. They deserve their celebrations, and they deserve everything that they get. And I really, really hope that they stay up next season.
I'll tell you what, I applaud the pair of you, Scott and Cookie. Not that you'll ever get the full attachment and affiliation, because I don't imagine Spurs or Arsenal ever getting relegated and having to come up through the playoffs. But if there's one thing to add to your bucket list, it is going to Wembley on a Championship playoff final. It is without a shadow. And I've been to an FA Cup final against Man United and been 7 minutes away from Palace winning the FA Cup final. That moment, Jason Punch and Scorn will never, ever leave me. And it did reduce a grown man to tears when that happened. But I'll tell you now, the jubilation and joy of going up in a Championship playoff final, and I still relive it now. Joel Ward off the line on the 120th minute, Spironi off the line halfway through the game, 0-0. You literally will not beat that feeling of getting all the way through a season, finishing, Palace finished sixth, so ultimately, you get the harder draw because you have to finish, play third, and then you get, you know, the ramifications that afterwards. But going up in that manner is just absolutely unbelievable.
It's probably along with Rangers getting to that Europa League final, I'd probably say the Forest one is the number one story, because I remember me and Jason sitting here doing our Will of Wonder and Jason throwing out his Forest are rooted to the bottom of the table puns. And to think that they're now in the Premier League is incredible, really.
I just wanted to say again about Cooper and Forrest is not just the fact that they were bottom of the league when he took over, but it's worth noting that Brennan Johnson was playing for Lincoln City last year. So he's had a massive step up in terms of level, and he got 10 goals for Lincoln in 40 appearances. He's doubled his return, like, overall. Like, it's just insane, the turnaround. You know, Colback, like, you two probably remember Colback playing for Newcastle and, was it Sunderland? You know, so he really has turned around. You know, this just, it's not just a case of taking on a squad of good players and turning them. Even at best, right, I think everyone thought Forest under Houghton or whoever probably would be a mid-table Championship club. But, as you know, they ended up being unlucky not to get automatic promotion. They should have, barring that, you know, the Bournemouth game getting postponed earlier in the season because of COVID late on. you know, that threw
wasn't
it.
That wait, wasn't that because of the wind actually?
Yes, yeah. Oh yeah, sorry, it was, yes. Because they called that off last minute.
That was pathetic from Bournemouth as well. Yeah. There was no coincidence at all from them being like full of injuries and like, you know, players out or players fatigued, etc. There was nothing to do with it, was it?
No, 100% not. And the fact that Jed Spence now, Jed Spence,
Are you going to talk about Neil Warnock here?
Yeah, I am going to bring it up.
Yeah.
He's obviously been linked with Spurs and stuff, and I don't know. Again. So the full story here is that Middlesbrough, when Neil Warnock was in charge, had Jed Spence, but they had another young right back as well. Basically, they had two really good right-sided wing backs, or you know, right backs, whatever you want to call them. Spence is known to have in the past has had issues with his attitude problem, and apparently, and again, these aren't confirmed, but if you read into it. I think he had a case of being in the wrong crowd at Middlesbrough, and certain individuals at the club felt like he needed to get away from the area to fulfil his potential. Not as extreme as Ravel Morrison, but similar kind of situation. And Neil Warnock all season has been saying, look, I told him that he needs to sort his attitude out and he'll either become a Premier League player or he'll end up a non-league player. He obviously... referenced Neil Warnock quite timely and aptly yesterday with a cigar in his mouth, aptly welcoming Neil Warnock to Twitter. Yes, it's a bloody brilliant tweet. But again, it threw up the debate about his potential attitude and this, that, and the other. But that was a player who was very raw and needed work. And at one point, Borough were going to call him back, and he voiced his content to stay. He's actually since, after the game yesterday, came out and said he potentially would like to stay for Forest. But again, I mean, he said it's out of his hands, which I think he basically means, you know, his agent will probably source him a move somewhere else. But he's done the job. He's proved whatever Neil Warnock said to him, he's taken on the advice. And Neil Warnock is appreciated as a manager. I've seen Neil Warnock twice at Palace. I don't care what you say. He's good value and he's a proper footballing man. And he's great value for the Championship. And over the years, he's been a great Championship manager. But he clearly, whatever was said, it worked because he's come out the other side. And, well...
He did respond to Jed Spence, by the way. He did respond to him on Twitter. He did.
I've not seen that.
He did actually put a message back to him and said, I told you you'd become a conference or a Premier League player, so congratulations.
Fair play.
So he acknowledged it. Right, so before we move this on, I mean, just quickly, Leicester City seem to be piping up and saying that they've now got a true Premier League derby. And let's be honest, complete Forest bollocks. Couldn't give two shits about Leicester City.
Complete bollocks.
They couldn't give two shits. That derby rivalry, if they met Derby tomorrow, it would still be bigger than the All Premier League clash between Leicester. And that's another lonely club that is Leicester City, just like Brighton. Cookie. We can't talk about Forest in the same sort of light as Jason's already alluded to. We've never been there with Championship players or anything like that. So we can talk about where, just briefly for the next few minutes, and then we'll wrap this up, as I said. Forest next season. Now, you've come, well, you know better than anyone, unfortunately, for yourselves, how Forest are with Arsenal Football Club. You've got a score to settle with Nottingham Forest next season. So how do you see Forest settling in?
Couple of them, didn't we? Now, like I said, the FA Cup games we've experienced there, the atmosphere is second to none. Like, they really do get behind. They have got to keep, if Spence is still there, my God, they've got themselves such a player who's going to absolutely shine next year in the Premier League. But I think if they can, well, first of all, keep the manager, get a few players in that can, you know, got some experience in there, and I think they can hold their own. You know, I think players will look at that and think, you know, I want to go be a part of that. No doubt, we've definitely got a score to settle with them, especially away at their place.
I know people like these small clubs that come up and whatnot, and don't get me wrong, it is exciting. It's great to begin with, but after a while, you really do start to notice when it's teams like Bournemouth, Burnley, and you're like, oh, bloody hell. But next season, when you start seeing games like Nottingham Forest versus Leeds, you know, Spurs v Forest is a massive game because of simply that FA Cup final that they had back in 91. Like, that Liverpool is a massive Forest game. Liverpool Forest for the European battle in the 70s with all Cluffy and all that. You've got obviously Arsenal Forest this year with the FA Cup. I don't care what anyone says, but it's just nostalgia. Like, there's something about those games. Like, as I said, the Leeds Forest, Villa Forest. It's just the league can do with some of these teams in there, because it just becomes like no game is a small game. And I do think, as much as we bang on about Leeds, it's better with them being in it.
I'd say there's three clubs that I'd say are missing. I think three clubs I'd say that are missing from this at the minute. And I'd say Blackburn, Coventry, and possibly Sunderland.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll put my sticker book out. That's a roll back to the 90s.
Ain't it just? Next, we'll have Bradford.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Sheffield Wednesday, that's definitely one. I'd love to have Derby back in the Premier League. Position. Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday. We talk about big rivalries. That is one for the making, I tell you. I'm not going to lie. I've got Forest staying up ahead of Fulham and Bournemouth at the moment. I don't care. We'll see where that is come July when we come back. Because we will start to make our early calls on where we think teams will finish. Because, boys, I don't know if you're aware, but me and Jason have already discussed next season, we won't be doing predictions on a weekly basis, and we won't be updating our table on a weekly basis. It will be a prediction from day one, and that will be it all the way to the end of the season.
Should have done that this year.
So, rolls on nicely to the final points tally. Here we go then. So I will read out where it currently stands, and then we will go from there. So the points look like this currently. Myself on 81. Jason and Cookie are on 63. And Cossy is on 59. So he's got a 4-point gap. And just to make this really interesting, you get 2 points for every confirmed position. So,
Jason beat me now.
Let's get my one out the way, shall we? So, my table looked like this. Man City top, so that will get me 2. Liverpool second, another 2. Chelsea third, another 2. I then had Arsenal fourth, Spurs fifth. And then I had Man United 6th, West Ham 7th, which gets me another 2. And then there's a massive gap of it being a bit all over the place. Mind you, I wasn't far out. It was just all the wrong way round. I had Wolves, Leicester, Brighton, which was actually the other way round. You had Leicester, then Brighton, then Wolves. And then I had Villa, Southampton, Palace, Leeds, Newcastle, then Everton, then Brentford, then Watford, Burnley, Norwich. So I got Everton right in 16th and Norwich right at the bottom. So that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 points, which annoyingly doesn't take me into triple digits, but hey ho, 95 points, that's mine at the end. Now it gets interesting. Let's see where Cossy got.
Bearing in mind, I missed what the first 2 months of the season of prediction.
You did.
Save us the agony here, right? This guy's going to come in, finish top on points, being the shortest guy in the season. Oh,
fucking table. Nah, I went with my heart. I should have gone Man City to win.
He did. Because actually went Liverpool top, Man City second. No points there. He got Chelsea third. So that's 2 points. He had Arsenal fourth, Spurs fifth. He went with his heart with West Ham in 6th and Man United in 7th. That never happened either. He had Wolves in 8th. Funny enough, to Jason's delight, he got Brighton nailed on in 9th. And funny enough, his next correct position was Palace in 12. So he predicted that one right, didn't he? Eh? He said Leicester in 10th, Villa 11th, and then he predicted
the scallop starter.
He got Southampton 13th, Brentford 14th, Newcastle 15th, Leeds 16th. He said Burnley 17th and Everton 18th, and he got the bottom 2 nailed on with Watford and Norwich. So that gives Cossy 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 points. So Kossi will finish on 69 points, which means Cookie and Jason only have to get 3 correct to finish on the same amount of points. Here we go then. We will start with Cookie. To Jason's delight, Cookie said Liverpool would finish top, Man City would finish second, which straight away throws a spanner in the works. Chelsea in third, so you got 2 points there. You said Arsenal would be fourth and Spurs would be fifth, but you did predict Man United and West Ham in sixth and seventh, which means you've got your 6 points. It's just whether you can pick up any more points. And here we go. You said Wolves 8th, Leicester 9th, Villa 10th, Palace 11th, Brighton 12th, Newcastle 13th, Southampton 14th, Brentford 15th, Leeds 16th, Burnley 17th. No points from 8 down. But you did say Watford 19th and Norwich in 20th. So you will finish on 10 points, which puts you on 73.
What's on the scores on the door so far? Come on.
Posse 69, Cookie 73. I'm on 95. You need to get 10 points to tie with Cookie or more to finish second. And here we go. It's a good start, mate, because you got Man City top. Yes. Liverpool second.
Yes.
Chelsea third. That's 6 already. And then you said Man United 4th. That was a blinder. Spurs in 5th. Arsenal in 6th. But Cookie, you might want to look away now because he said West Ham in 7th. Leicester in 8th, which already puts him on 10. He only needs one more position to go.
Rain it home. Rain it home.
He said Villa in 9, Leeds in 10th, Wolves in 11th, and the team to bring it home are his own Crystal Palace in 12th.
Of course it would be, wouldn't it?
Fucking have some of that.
And funny enough, he never got any of the other positions correct.
That's about right.
So Jason gets 12 points, which puts him on 75 points and second in predictions. He pulled that from his arse, didn't he?
Fucking
bloody hell.
I live my life pulling things from my arse. There you go, see?
Nightmare. Yeah, don't say that's a magic trick.
a party trick.
Just that, like that, huh? We are done for the season.
Job done.
Like that, boys, we are done for the season. It's been a great one. We will be back, obviously, when the transfer window opens, which is from July 1st. So our first show will likely be the 4th of July.
Can we take a moment as well before we wrap up? Because I think we need to do it out of respect of Kossi. But this is also going to be a transitional period for TFD because next year, We're gonna have to reference the championship a fair bit, aren't we?
Yeah, Kossi will have his own little segment next year with his own Wheel of Wonder for the championship.
That'll probably be Rant FM. That we'll have to change it to Rant FM. That'll be like the start of
it.
Like
it will. It will only be your segment, mate. We're gonna make that your segment because we've also got to listen to you become Liverpool and Forest fans next season as well. 3 clubs. But yeah, we are done. It's been a great, I can't believe how many episodes, 52 episodes. Bonkers how quick that's all gone. Boys, enjoy your Monday nights for a period of time. No football for a while, and I will see you at the beginning of the transfer window where I'm sure we will be looking at our clubs with worry or delight.
Worry. Definitely worry.
We worry, eh? We worry. Maybe you'll have new American owners by then, eh?
Bring them away.
Cookie.
Bring them on.
You can enjoy Monday nights as well because you haven't got to worry about Arsenal being humiliated on Monday night football for a few more months.
I have to readjust the Thursday nights again as well.
Hey, we've just bigged it up. Enjoy it. Arsenal, Man enjoy United it. Are in there. Enjoy it. I'll just enjoy Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Don't mind me. For a lot longer, actually, because the World Cup delays it all, won't it? Champions League finals, June 10th next year. Bloody hell.
Someone's a bit bitter over there.
Tell me about it. Right, boys, I'll see you all in July. In the meantime, it's bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TFDebate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening and keep an ear out for the next episode.